Welcome to another episode of La Film Nation. We talk about filming news, cameras, gear, and the newest trends in the filming industry. Also, coming up later, our five-part series about video production, where you will learn everything you need to know to build a successful career in videography, from client briefing to post-production and closing more clients. Sounds interesting? Stay tuned for more. Welcome back. I'm Nigel from Seller J Films, a videographer and filmmaker in Fukuoka, Japan. And William?
Hey, I'm William from Axon Studio. I'm a photographer and videographer in Fukuoka, Japan. Hey, John.
Hey, it's John Bear. I'm a traveling filmmaker and I focus on having few pieces of gear. So you could call me the minimalist filmmaker.
All right, guys. Thanks for that. All right. So what we're going to jump into today is hot gear news. And recently, a pretty cool little thing just came out. I'm a big drone guy myself, and it is the DJI Mavic Air 2. Now, a little background. I'm a Phantom 4 user myself. I had the Phantom 3 standard. Mm. And before that, I had toy drones and things like that, and even little tiny whoops and things. So I've always been progressing. But I see this Mavic Air 2 as a pretty cool filming tool because it actually goes under the Phantom 4 Pro, which isn't, it's not as large. So if you do any traveling, the Phantom 4 sucks bringing it on airplanes.
Yeah, for sure.
I can't stand it. It's horrible. It's always my carry-on, so I always have to bring it with me. So it's like
pretty huge. Yeah,
it's just too big, you know. So I want to be the Peter McKinnon guy where I just pop it into my filming bag and it's like it's all one compartment, one thing, but two bags is no fun to travel with. So yeah, John, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I've purchased a Mavic Air myself, the first one, and the timing couldn't be worse because now the Mavic Air 2 has been announced, and so I have an unopened Mavic Air 1, which I didn't know was the one until just a few weeks ago. So what to do about that? I want to upgrade to the 2, so I'm going to try to get rid of it while it's still packed and sealed, and we'll see what happens.
You had the Mini there for a while, didn't you?
I got the Mini too. The Mini is a lot of fun. I totally recommend it for anybody who is like entry level, such as myself, actually. But unfortunately, it met its demise early while traveling in Turkey. I was doing a pan shot of this sort of old Christian temple. And then, poof, you hit a tree. You know, you're going to the side like this, bam.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's game over, man.
I think Mavic Air 2 has the sensors. 360, I don't quote me on it. I think its side doesn't have it, maybe back. I can't remember. We're going to look at it.
Like front and back only. Yeah, back because only. Your small one didn't have any sensors, right? Yeah. The smallest one, right?
Yeah. Phantom 4 Pro has saved me once where I did a pullback on an island and I pulled all the way back and I pulled off this island and I didn't realize a forest was behind the drone. And as soon as I hit the forest, the drone just went, and it just stopped. And I was like, I did a 180 turn and I was like, oh my God, I was about 5 feet from a tree. So that's my only time I've almost ever lost my Phantom 4 Pro. So sensors are a good thing. They do help. So
for sure.
Yeah.
They've just came.
All right, cool. Let's just take a look at some of the specs. So let's head over to our screen. Okay, so here we go. This is the main page of the Mavic Air 2. And you're looking at a half-inch sensor with 4K, 60 frames per second, 48 megapixel. And I'm not too sure. I think the Phantom 4 Pro is, I think, 21 megapixel. So huge upgrade on photography.
I believe the first Air is just 12 megapixels.
Yeah, they went crazy on this one.
Yeah, really.
Mm.
This one, the 8K Hyperlapse. Ooh.
I know. That's insane, man. That's insane. Now, if you guys aren't familiar with this, I do not have this feature. The Hyperlapse feature is basically you just send the drone into like a path and then it just takes a picture, and then it just puts it all together. It ties it together and things like that. So 8K is pretty awesome. It's all basically set and forget, just autopilot it, and it just does the whole course. So that's pretty cool. Comes with the Obstacle Avoidance 3.0, which is another awesome, OcuSync 2.0, and I believe that's, 10 kilometers. Now, I don't trust DJI. There's no way it's going 10 kilometers, but I don't know.
The range from your remote, seems very, very far-fetched. Probably. Especially for a small one. I mean, it's not even top of the line, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely not Wi-Fi. It's OcuSync 3.0 or whatever.
Okay. Yeah. So OcuSync 2.0. That's actually, everything else considered, this is the main reason I want to upgrade from the Air to the Air 2. Just having that assurance. Because, you know, you can fly it around and the signal gets wobbly. That's like when your heart drops. You don't want that situation.
Yeah, so, my old Phantom 3 standard used to be Wi-Fi, and it was horrible. Within 300 to 400 meters, it would just get... horrible signal would come in.
Wow.
Phantom 4 has, I think, OcuSync 1. I might be wrong, but it sometimes has issues around Wi-Fis and heavy areas and things like that. So I imagine this is the newest technology. That's what you're paying for, obviously.
Yeah.
And so the Mavic Air that you have, John, it doesn't do the foldy thing, right?
It folds. Yeah. It folds just differently. So you notice how the back legs, they fold like down like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the way of folding is very similar to the Mavic Mini. Like looking at this, if I just took a quick glance, I would think it's the Mavic Mini. It's very similar. But the difference with the first one is that the little pins that are on the front legs, you got to fold them down, and then the hind leg will fit sort of under the front legs when you fold it out. So the sequence of folding is different. The way they fold is different. Yeah. This one, I'm much more of a fan of. So I've had hands-on of both the Mini and the Mavic Air 1. This is much nicer.
I want this being able to just throw it in a bag. I don't have to worry.
Also, another reason I would love to upgrade is because the old app is not really as good as the Mavic Mini app, I believe. Mm-hmm. So having tried out the Mavic Mini app, I just really enjoy the interface much more.
Okay.
So that's another sort of reason to upgrade for me.
34 minutes is insane. You can't go through a whole 34 minutes. Good. That's insane amount of flying. So
that's like 15 minutes more than the predecessor. That's crazy. Jesus,
that's crazy. Very cool. So you can follow bikes, be the cool guy. Look at that speed chase. I don't know. That looks more like an Inspire to me, but whatever. We'll see. And then I'm not too familiar, but the HDR, I guess that's, what is it? Multi-layering the images on top of it? Is it stacking? Is that what it does? Okay. Yeah.
Is it doing multi-exposure and stacking?
Wow. Yeah, it stacks it
on in video or in photo?
This is in dynamic video. HDR video, dynamic by default. The secret to incredible HDR video is a high-performance quad bare image sensor. A single frame separates exposure, blah, blah, blah. You guys can read all this.
But, Yeah. Oh, maybe it's like some kind of oversampling. Like it's that's why they use a 48 megapixel sensor.
Look at the dynamic range. Look at that.
Yeah, look at that mountain in the distance. Holy crap.
Like the difference between like the sun part and like the foreground, this kind of structure, like the shadows are really like not dark at all. Like,
and you actually get some color in the ground as well.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy.
That's awesome. And you can be a camel guy. You can film camels. Hey, there you go.
It's perfect for somebody living in Dubai.
Live near camel.
Some people too many camels.
So definitely, I definitely would love to upgrade to this.
Yep, I got my eyes on it. So hopefully, I'll be able to play around with it soon.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. That's it. That's the Hyperlapse. A little secret, you actually set up a waypoint flight. So you would do this flight in the morning and see how it's moving from light to day. So I know a guy I think he's the Philippines. He works for DJI. And what he does is he sets up these waypoint flights where he flies to the area in the morning. And then when he reaches the peak, he'll fly from 5 to 6 at night, continuing at that exact point. And then he'll splice them all together and do like this like morning to evening transition. It's the most insane thing you'll ever see.
You showed me. So the thing is able to reproduce the exact same pass.
That's right.
Twice. Motion controlled camera.
I can even imagine this technique being super useful for like cinematic projects. There's a lot of like VFX that involved having two cameras where you splice together. Like, let's say you want to have, this is a little far-fetched, but imagine you're doing a video with a hologram character and like a other character, or you want two like to clone us the same person. Doing the waypoint flight would be something you can do with that. Yeah. Splicing two videos together.
Yeah, you're able to mix two videos or have a video with an actor and another one with a clean plate with no actors in the frame.
Yeah, exactly.
That kind of stuff. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
It's a very useful tool.
I don't know how precise it must be.
Well, it's using GPS, so it's only off by like a meter.
So in landscape, it's okay, but for filming people, I'm not sure it's precise enough.
Yeah,
you know,
we'll see. Maybe that's something I can test once I get my hands on it.
And, you know, if you are into this, I sometimes use these modes, like the circle and, you know, these things, the rocket. I haven't really been using these. But if you are new to the game, it's good. Mm-hmm. But I would always recommend just being a manual flyer. But this boomerang shot, that's insane, man. So it's just basically keeps rotating round and round you.
So with the Mavic Mini, it had all of these things. It's really cool. And but I always noticed I got better results by doing it myself.
Yeah. Honestly, learn with toys first, man. Get yourself those little tiny Whoops and those little toys and just move on to that. Yeah. So yeah, that's the best thing to do. And I think that's about it. And I think at this point, it's whether or not you want to drop about $1,000 on this. The package is around $1,300. I personally was thinking of maybe selling my Phantom and maybe getting into something like this. I don't know if I could sell it for $1,000, but I was thinking about trying to sell. I got three batteries, so maybe put it together as a package. So Medicotti's really good if you're into reselling your gear. You can do quite well reselling it on those auction type websites. So something to think about. Reselling your gear is really good.
So. Mm-hmm. So it comes with NDs when you buy the Fly More combo. That's actually pretty badass.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. NDs are awesome, man.
Cool.
All right, so I'm done with my little, you know, droney thing, and I think William, go ahead.
There's one news. I mean, everyone's been talking about it. It's a little cold news now, but anyway, I want to talk about it. The Canon R5. Do you guys heard about it?
Yeah.
So the whole thing that everyone's talking about is 8K. So is 8K gonna be finally like consumer available? Is it useful? How good is it actually gonna be? I don't know. I don't know. Like, it's like everyone's excited, like saying it's a Sony killer or Blackmagic killer. I don't know.
I'm sure you would have something to say about it being a Blackmagic killer. I know you're a Blackmagic lover yourself over there. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. I mean, I've worked with footage from the EOS R before. Mm-hmm. Even 8-bit, it's not bad. Even the 1080 is pretty good. And the very good thing, I mean, I love also those cameras because the glass is just magnificent. It's just beautiful images. But the focus, I mean, the focus is just the best. Like, you can't fight against that with a Lumix or with a Sony. But when it comes to colors and the RAW capabilities, I don't know. I've heard that the 4K RAW on cameras like the C200 or C300 maybe is like pretty heavy to work with in post-production. You know, it's very slow, the playback. So I can't even imagine like 8K RAW, what it must be. Like, what kind of computer are you going to need to play that? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. So lots to consider, huh? Well, myself, I mean, I've been shooting 1080 and 4K a lot. And honestly, before I started shooting 4K, I wasn't even sure if I needed 4K. Now that I'm shooting 4K, I'm like, I need 4K. So it really it really depends on where you're coming from. But I think if we're talking from the consumer perspective, like who's watching your video, in the end, 1080 is still really, really good. Yeah. So the whole 8K race, I'm not too hyped about it at the moment. Yeah. 4K for me is still like amazing.
I agree with you like on that. I was also like, well, 1080 is enough. And actually when you get a 4K camera, you're like, oh, this is so good.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree also that 1080 is usually good, except actually when you're uploading on YouTube, I think that the 1080 on YouTube is not that good. I can make a wonderful, like a beautiful 1080 export from my program, you know, like I edit, I export 1080 and it's beautiful. And then YouTube is just gonna
destroy it.
Like, especially on scenes where it moves a lot, where you have a lot of things in the frame.
Yeah.
What's it called? What's it called? The lines that you see. So like, you know, when you're looking at a
compression,
video,
compression.
Is that like, a compression, like a codec like, thing, or what is that?
Like, yeah, when codec. You see. Like when you get like blocks and stuff.
Yeah,
the blocky thing is like compression. Basically, it's trying to bin lots of pixels together, like pixels that look alike. They try to bin it spatially and also temporally.
I see.
So if pixels are similar in time or in place, they try to bin them together and bring down the bitrate, basically. So most of the time, so right now I've just gotten into the habit of, even if I shoot in 1080, even if I edit in 1080, I'm just going to export in 4K, upscale in 4K, and then upload that 4K to YouTube, because the 4K version is going to be better than the 1080 on YouTube.
So honestly, you can't tell the difference. Honestly, it's very hard to see the difference.
On my computer, it's really hard to see the difference. Yeah. But on YouTube, like when you go to 1080, from 1080 to 4K, it's just very different. And 8K also makes a difference. It's just about not about the resolution, but more about the bitrate that YouTube is gonna allow the video to be at.
Just a quick little thing. So, what I started doing is, when I make my movies, I'm just doing 1080p, even if it's 4K or whatever. I'm just doing a 1080p movie, and when I get to the very end, I just go to modify. And this is in Final Cut, and I just change it to 4K. And I just walk away from the computer, takes 15 minutes for the computer to do its thing. Yeah. I come back and I got a 4K movie. So that's just a little tip.
Yeah,
is if you're going to do that 1080 4K thing, don't edit 4K. Just edit 1080, and then when you come back, you have a 4K movie ready for you.
Using Premiere Pro, I do similar like that, I guess. I use proxies. So every time I sit down to edit, I just turn all my 4K files into proxies, and then I start editing. Easy as that.
Yeah. So if we go over the specs a little bit, can you see my screen now, guys?
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, so if we see this, the specs, I mean, like, so you only have, when you shoot 8K, it's only RAW, or rather, when you want to shoot RAW, it's only in 8K, you can't shoot 4K RAW, and it's only 30 FPS. You can also shoot in H.265, apparently, for 8K and 4K. 4K goes to 120. That's pretty big. That is pretty good.
4K video capture up to 120 frames.
120. 422 10-bit. That is really sweet.
265.
Yeah.
That's the codec.
265.
265. All my movies I render now are in 265.
Yeah.
So I'm using ProRes as the master file, and then I take it to compressor and I make a 265 file, and it goes from 42 gigs to around about a gig and a half.
I think it's
perfect for file transfer to your customers and uploading on Facebook and YouTube. So you guys know I've been doing it.
I think it's good for you to make your master and to upload it and keep the size down on your storage.
Yeah.
But for editing, it's really heavy. Like,
is it?
Because it's super compressed. So when you edit, your CPU is gonna have to uncompress it to playback.
Oh.
So H.265, you might have 4K H.265. You might have to make proxies to edit, depending on your computer.
Sure.
Yeah. So something to keep in mind here. Anyway, I mean, I still, like, I'm not gonna lie, I still want to see footage from that camera.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much it's gonna sell for. People are saying maybe $3,500. Honestly, I would be really surprised if it's that cheap for that kind of camera. It's not cheap, but for that kind of camera,
I think the reason you're getting into bed with Canon is, if you scroll down, William, scroll down.
Yeah.
I think it's about the fourth bullet point, maybe third. That's the second.
What?
Sorry, my bad. It's the dual auto pixel. Dual pixel autofocus.
That's why you're
a little bit up there, William. It's up. It's under the 8K bullet points in that area.
Yeah,
and
whatever.
It's got the dual pixel autofocus is available in all video modes at all resolutions and frame rates. And if I'm going from Lumix to Canon, that's what I'm going for. It's that damn dual pixel autofocus.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Same thing. The only reason I would go for Canon is the dual pixel.
Yeah.
And glass is really good too, but I mean, you can get good glass on a lot of cameras. But yeah, and on contrary to the previous one, to the EOS R, I think the EOS R had some limitations for the dual pixel AF. It didn't work in every situation. This one apparently works in every frame rate, every resolution. That would be pretty sweet. Yeah. Anyway,
cool.
But Yeah. I mean, for people who like were more about color accuracy and raw editing and stuff like this, and less about resolution, maybe a good time to look at Blackmagic again, because the 6K actually dropped to $2,000 now. That's super cheap. Yeah, that's amazing.
Really,
yeah. So we know that editing in BRAW is...
What's up?
Editing in BRAW is it's a dream, isn't it?
I mean, since I started like last year, I mean, I can't really go back. Like my GH5 is just basically like collecting dust right now.
I hate you.
Actually, my GH5 is becoming my webcam right now. It's right here. I'm feeling myself with it. Since I started using B-roll, I mean, it's crazy what you can do with the colors in post and the color temperature and the ISO. It's just crazy. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we're going to talk about that maybe in a future video, actually, but like just, the post-production.
Just a little thing there about the Blackmagic. You talked about the price decrease.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I have special plugins that tell me all the secrets and stuff. So, so if you look at here, very interesting. Amazon was actually, they had it in stock. So Amazon used to be their Prime service, whatever. And then if you look here, about a month ago, Amazon got out of the game around April. So they bumped out, and then the price was $2,500. And then for some reason, the third party sellers came in and dropped the price to $2,000. So
that's the new price. That's the new official
that's
price.
The official
for the
price.
Black Magic.
1991.01. One seller.
Yeah.
Has it,
it's supposed to be 2,000 or something like that. Or close to 2,000.
As of today.
It used to be officially 24.95. And now it's 2,000.
If you look at the beginning and when it first came out, it was $4,500. It was $5,000, and then eventually Amazon.
That's a normal price, $24.95.
Yeah. So, normal anyone's price. Interested, this is Keepa, and you just install it on your Amazon, and it tells you the price.
I love that you taught me that. It's so good. Yeah, this really plugin. So, can you say again?
Keepa. Keepa. It's called Keepa.
Yeah. Okay, and just search that on
your plugins. Search Keepa, guys. Search Keepa and go to your Google Chrome Keepa. Install it. Never accept the prices you see on Amazon. Right now, there's a lot of price gouging going on, so get the Keepa. Then you can see the previous prices, and don't fall for webcams that are $120.
They used to be 60.
Yeah, they used to be 60 bucks, and now they're 120. And also, you can set up a price alert. So say you wanted that Blackmagic, it was 2,500. You could set up a price alert that would go into your email, and it'll tell you when it goes back to $2,000, you'll get an email.
I've never used that before. I should do that. Thanks.
It's called retail arbitrage. All right. Sounds good, guys. So let's move into the next part of our conversation.
So we're going to go through client briefing and understanding the needs of the client. This is the first part that we're going to go about today. Next time is going to be pre-production.
Okay.
And then third part, production. So filming on set on the day.
Cool.
Third part, post-production, obviously, so editing, color grading, all that kind of stuff, that sweet stuff that you like. And the fifth part is just, so once your project is done, how to upsell your client or find new clients using what you just done. Basically, you're going to go over a lot of stuff.
Yeah. One thing I like about these Zoom calls is it allows us to get together in a three-way conversation and talk about these topics. We all have different, areas that we're good at and have lots of experience through our age and wisdom and whatnot. And it's good to get together, talk about it. You guys are listening to it right now, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. So as we're, conveying our information out of our brains and things like that, it's good for you guys to hear what we have to say. And that's why we're actually making this series is, we don't know sometimes what we're going to say. And it's just, what do you say, John? Off the lib? Off the, what's it called?
Off the cuff.
Off the cuff. Right? Off the cuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Be careful saying that three times. So, yeah. So the first topic, William, what are you going to be talking about? It's briefing. Is that what it was?
Yeah. So, I mean, a big thing, some people, so we're going to start this series assuming that you got a lead. Maybe you got a lead to a client. You got your first actual meeting with them.
Yeah.
They're interested in your service.
Yeah.
And so... So some people are really good at just getting good clients, but then they kind of fuck up the interview and they don't know how to ask about they don't know how to get a proper briefing, and then that can lead to many problems down the road during production, many misunderstandings and that kind of stuff. So it's really important.
I didn't mean to cut you there, but I have something to say on the topic.
Yeah. Is that something that happened to you? I mean, that definitely happened to me before, you know, like not managing client expectation properly or underselling myself or that kind of stuff. So the first thing I want to talk about is really understanding your client. That's very important. And that means many things. Understanding like what is the size of your client, first of all, what kind of business they are. Have they already worked with a videographer, photographer, graphic designer before? Basically, do they have any branding? I mean, if you're looking at this topic with us today, you're probably kind of a beginner or getting to it. You're not like you're not a veteran. So we're going to assume that your client is not super big. It's not Nike, right? It's going to be like maybe a shop or a small company. And maybe they never worked with a videographer before. So the first thing you want to ask is, have you ever produced stuff? Have you worked with someone before? What was good about it? What was bad about it? And it's very important. You can get a lot of very good information from that. If they say, oh yeah, we worked with that guy before and we didn't like this and that and that, that's very valuable information because,
Well, I mean, a lot of the stuff you're talking about is part of the sales funnel as well. So asking all these questions and all that, it's a lot of the times it can be part of acquiring the client in the first place. So there's a great ebook that I read. It was recommended on the GH5 Facebook group. It's called Video Selling. And in this Video Selling, he has a survey template where you can send this. So you've already somewhat qualified a client that's interested in a video. You then send them this survey where you ask a lot of the questions that you just mentioned, but the point at which you're doing it is before you make the sale. So what you're prospecting is not just how to make the project, but also how to price the project. So
that's why
I'm going back and sort of cutting you off here, because I think we need to really mention that when you're prospecting, it needs to be done before the sale, because you don't want to get to a point where his expectations is for like something that's way beyond budget. And then you have to break the news to him. So way, you know, you can sort of try to get the clients that have the budget that you desire, if you desire like a bigger sort of project. If you guys want, I can run off real quick what the survey, questions
are. Go search for the survey. Yeah, go
I have it right here.
That's something I wanted to go, like to say, like exactly as you said, this information is not just for making the project, it's also for pricing yourself correctly. And so, yeah, you can, I mean, you could do that, like you said, like with a survey before the first meeting. That's also very good. So if you need to be more prepared, or if you're more of the talking guy, you know, you're very
like persuasive.
Yeah, persuasive or confident when you talk with people. Yeah. You have good social skills. Maybe it's better like to do that in person.
I would say that the survey comes first and then the in-person comes after. Okay, you can't really do it without one or the other.
Okay, just tell me, so what's in the survey?
Right, so the survey, the benefit of the survey is that it kind of makes the client also chase you. It puts you on a professional pedestal it pre-sells you as this professional.
Because you're asking the right questions that are checking off all the boxes, sort of.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. And so you don't have to waste your time with a video call before, you know, you've qualified your prospect through this.
Could you put this on your website? Could you put this on your website, for example? Can you share your screen maybe, John?
Actually, yeah. Let me share my screen. Actually, that's a great idea.
We made you co-host, so it's easier that way.
Right. So this is one that I made for a hairstylist here in Dubai. So I bet there's a bunch of people named Jalal, so Jalal is anonymous for now.
He's watching. But basically, right now.
So the first question is the most important one, which is, if we were chatting 12 months from now, what would have need to have happened for you to feel this project was a success? And so that makes them think, oh, actually, yeah, What do I want out of this video?
12 months from now.
That's the sentence is a little complicated. Yeah, basically it's asking, what's the end goal of the project?
Yeah.
Basically,
yeah.
What do you want? What do you want
this video in 12 months?
Yeah, right. I was gonna go over that this too, but yeah, okay.
But let me mention why this is so important, because this already is a powerful persuasion technique, which is known as making them think past the sale. So now they're imagining all the good benefits of a successful project.
Yeah.
And then you're coming in slapping right off the bat. You're just like,
they're already projecting.
Already, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. And then the next question is sort of the opposite, where it's like, where you're reeling back the expectations. So what do you think is holding you back from experiencing success with video right now? So now they have to sort of reel off a little like, I don't have the right equipment. I haven't found the proper guy to do it yet. You know, all these things that might be holding them back. The next one here is basically yes or no. Have you had experience doing this before?
Yeah. That's a really good one. Have you had any experience working with a videographer?
Yeah, and William mentioned that many times too. So
I know that's the William technique. He does that one where he asks, you know, photography wise, what happened, and then he learns from those mistakes. And
because
he says, he gives a solution. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And when they say all the things that were bad, when they complain basically about the previous guy, you can use the mirroring technique that Nigel loves so much. Of saying, oh, you didn't like that, right? That made you feel like he didn't do his job properly. Okay, yes. Yeah, so you can repeat what the person said. Oh,
go over the mirroring. Like but the mirroring is basically the last three words they said, you repeat it as a question. So like if they had a bad experience with blah, 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 you just ask a question based on that and then you can get more information. And by the end of it, you've already got all those answers that you need from them, and then now you can give them all the solutions. So it's called the mirroring technique. Basically.
They feel listened to, and they feel like you understand them, and they feel like empathy from you.
Mm-hmm. Instead of just going into the meeting going, I'm a videographer, I'm a 4K specialist, so, I've got a gimbal, and I'm a drone guy, I'm going to kill it, right? And
exactly.
Like, you don't go in there like that, right?
That's what we're going towards, actually, with this whole first part, is don't go talking about yourself.
Yeah,
it's good to explain a little bit about what you do at the end, but listen to your clients. Like you want to ask them as much question as possible, and make them feel understood. Yeah, so
absolutely. Yeah.
Continue.
So the part that you're talking about, that comes in the call after you've qualified them with the survey. If you decide to go the route that I'm sort of a proponent of. Yeah. So as you can see, the next questions, they're all just talking about the pricing. So it's first, it's what is the product? Then it's what do you typically sell this product for? And then how many are you selling each month? And then how much repeat business do you get? And here's more important. What is the average value of a new customer to your business over 12 months? So you can take the answer of the last question and then base your pricing kind of on that. And you can promise them like, hey, with a video like this, it's going to be seen by X amount of people. And if even just two or three people click through the link, you're in business. So
how much sales do you need to basically repay the video you paid me for?
Exactly. And then this question actually, I mean, this one makes their mind run wild. You know, they imagine really high numbers. And so when you pitch your video price, it might be very like perceived as being high if you just told them off the bat. But after this question, they're going to feel that it's a very fair price. Yeah. So that's at least the point that this video selling ebook was making, and it's totally convinced me, and this questionnaire has worked for me.
Where did you get that from? Is there some way our viewers could get something like that, or is that just like your own template, or did you made it yourself? So, right,
this is I made myself this one here, but it's based off of the template that's offered in the ebook.
Okay,
so the ebook I think it's just called Video Selling Techniques literally, but we'll put a link in the description. I guess
John, those were really good points, man. That was awesome. Can I share my screen? I want to show you guys a couple of things that we were talking about. And one of them was this black swan technique. And again, it's all there for you guys if you need it. It's basically the mirroring. So it teaches you mirroring and labeling and all sorts of different things. So if you found that interesting, you might want to pick up this class.
This masterclass, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
So you said it's... It's the negotiator, right? Terrorist negotiator.
Exactly. Yeah. And the survey itself is never going to close the client. So you always have to do the phone call afterwards. That's how the survey works.
I guess it depends on the market, but my only concern with a survey like this is have you ever had any case where it's scared of a client? Like, you know, to have all these questions being thrown at them like right away or not?
I can imagine some clients can be put off by it.
Yeah,
so I sent it once to this guy that he's selling like herbal teas from Amsterdam. Uh-huh. And he lives near where I am. And he procrastinated answering it for a long time. And like I met him in person first and we talked about the idea of working together. So I think sometimes it can feel overwhelming, but I also think once you get them to actually fill it out and people are, they love to talk about themselves. They love to, you know, because the survey has a lot of value in it for them as well. Just making them consider these questions before hiring someone, even if they don't end up hiring you, is a lot of value for the client.
Yeah.
So yeah, yes and no, I would say to answer your question. I think it's provides a lot of value to them. Yeah,
one thing I always heard in Japan is never diss. This is what someone told me. He does tourism videos in Japan. And he said, you never diss the client. Mm. Yeah, you never diss the client or the person who made the video. You just show them the problems in the video itself. And then you show them the solution. But he said in Japan, you never ever say that drone shot was horrible. Now, don't get me wrong. I've done it too. But he said, Nigel, stop doing that. Don't do that. Mm. He says, what you do instead, you say, hey, you notice in that camera angle how he just popped up is really fast? His settings were a little too high. In my particular situation, my settings are lower and you get a more cinematic look in my footage. So that's something you might want to think about is, you know, the gimbal settings. And now the customer, the client is like, oh, gimbal settings? Really? And they might ask the other guy, well, what are your gimbal settings? Nigel's saying his are cinematic and slow. Are yours cinematic and slow? And so instead of being, you know, a dick, you know, and it's hard for me. I'm a dick sometimes. Yeah. But I mean, you know, just put that little, nugget in there and that information for them. So,
basically more
on the threat of educating the client. Yeah, that's always what
educating
we should do.
The client.
Instead of scolding them, or scolding the person that made something for them or critiquing, you're kind of trying to educate. Yeah.
Okay. I'm sure in photography that happens all the time, right? It must be so strict in photography.
I try to educate without talking about the technical stuff, because the technical stuff, right away you see people going, ugh, what? What are you talking about? Yeah, aperture? What is that? So don't go too much into the technical stuff. Like, you can say it as in like, oh, you know your stuff, but don't try to expect that the person in front of you is going to understand aperture, frame rate, whatever. But you can say, oh, I'm doing this for this reason.
Getting back to critiquing the videos, I did a sports gym video, and the videographer who would come in, he could never do a good job of their gym. He was using a cheap camera. It was always underexposed. It was dark as heck. It was horrible. And sorry, but I mean, it was. But when we talked about it, I said, look, you know, I'm going to be able to come in there smoother. I'm going to bring lights. I'm going to be able to do interviews with professional microphones. You're going to see a way different level. And he said, for the first time in 10 years in our gym, we actually got a video that we're proud of. And he said, it took him 10 years to get a video that he can actually show off. So, you know, it just shows that if you know what you're doing, you know, you can wow the customer. So,
So that's basically, you put that into application. Like, basically, you have the client tell you about the past projects.
Yeah.
And you bring to the table what you can do better, basically. So that's one thing. That's the first thing I think that's very important to ask that. Then trying to kind of figure out the size of your client. So I think the questions that you have in your survey, John, are really good about what are your typical customer. How much do they pay for your product? So with these questions, you try to figure out, are they a luxury brand? Are they very cheap and cheap brand, high volume, cheap price, or low volume, high price? These questions are very important because, I mean, you gonna try to figure out what the budget of the client is, even without asking the question. Still think it's a good idea to ask for a budget.
I think the tonality when you're asking it really matters. This is something I learned from none other than the Wolf of the Wall Street himself, Jordan Belfort. He says, so he has a video selling course too, which I really enjoy. He says, when you're asking for the budget, just ask like how much money do you have writing on this? Just a ballpark. Like the tonality of it makes it like it's not a big deal. Of course, like I haven't practiced the tonality, like, but the whole like just a ballpark, like, you know, you have this sort of like reasonable guy tonality where it's like, you know, not a big deal. That is a really nice way to directly ask it without asking like how much money do you have? Like, because that's when people set up their defenses and they're like, oh shit, you know, this is a shark.
And it's good to bring it up then after, like you said, like after you've talked about where the client, well, their clients, how much money they make, and because now they have perspective. And like the thing, I really like the thing you said about like the in 12 months. What I was bringing.
What will have had to happen. For you to think of this as a success.
So one thing. My way of seeing it usually would be just what's the goal? Like, so there's many. There's what's the purpose of the video? Like, are you trying to bring awareness to your brand? Are you trying to get more clients? Are you trying to get subscriptions to a service? Are you trying to sell a product? All these questions. It seems basic, but all of this. And and based on, and then what's the message that your brand want to put forward? What kind of, like, are you like very dynamic, very sportsy brand, or are you very luxury, very high end? All this kind of stuff is very important.
I know one client, he wanted a good video for his website. It was so basic because if they stick on the website longer, the bounce rate is lower. And previously the bounce rate was like, you know, 90% or something. They'd stay on the website for 10 seconds. And then after my videos went onto the website, he said the bounce rate just went straight down.
That's good.
People stayed on the website for like a minute or two or something like that. So he said Google SEO just started ranking them up higher and stuff like that. So that's another aspect to think about is
That's when
video
you can
really make a website jump up into the Google rankings. So.
That's something you should educate your clients on. And that's news to me right now. So I'm gonna use
that. You have to bring it up. You have to say that's one thing also. So that's a very good point because often clients say, "Oh, I want a huge video. I want it to be like 10 minutes or 5 minutes." Yeah. And when they say that, you don't dismiss them right away, but ask, "What is the video gonna be for? Where is it gonna be posted? Is it gonna be on Facebook, on Instagram, on your website front page, on YouTube?" Yeah. If it's anything but YouTube, you probably want a video that's 30 to 1 minute, not longer. Like, and they need to understand that. They need to understand that people don't watch stuff that's longer than that.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, that seems obvious, but...
Yeah. Unless it's this podcast.
Yeah. Well, it's on YouTube. It's on YouTube.
Don't go.
It's content. It's not a commercial, so it's okay if it's long. It's bringing value.
We're giving free value.
Yeah.
It's stick around. It's more value around the corner.
Yeah. But if we were to make a promotion video for that podcast for people to watch it, I would make it 15 seconds.
That's true. Yeah. That's a good analogy. Yeah.
Yeah. So
well, I mean, you watch a U.S. a commercial, and it's like Domino's pizza, delicious pizza, blah blah blah, and the guy boom 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 boom, and like the thing takes 20 seconds. It's like I get it. Yeah, you got and a new two topping pizza for $6.99. Got it. I understand, right?
So not sponsored by Domino's though.
Yeah,
I wish it was.
No affiliation. So that's why it's very important to ask where is it going to be posted and what's the actual aim, like concrete aim of the video. Is it to bring them to a website that gives them more detail about your service? Is it to make a direct sale? Is it to have them give you a phone call? All of this is very important.
Just the first topic we hit was briefing, and then the next topic I just checked was purpose, and I think you just killed purpose right there. That was
killed it.
Yeah, the purpose of the video.
That's done. Bravo. You got purpose perfectly.
So we talked about the target audience also. So the target audience is your customer like very high end or whatever. Like as a foreign, as a like all over the world, all that kind of stuff. Very important. Yeah. The message we kind of talked about, the message of the brand. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's, what's the message of the video, basically? Well, we talked about it a lot.
The message, I mean, sometimes there's marketing campaigns, so... You know,
I mean, it's about, so what's the message? Is it, we talked about it already. Is it just brand awareness? Is it our values, you know, for the brand? And it's just, you know, like some big, it's more like big campaigns would do that, you know, big
we're
companies that want to have like a nice image. Yeah. Or is it just selling a product?
Yeah. There was a GH5 video, I'll always remember it, and it was so funny. It was a storyboard, and it was like the guy had chicken scratched the storyboard, and it was like, guy gets up, goes to the pool, girl comes over, sits next to him, puts, I think, a drink down or something. It was, I can't remember what it was for, but it was by a pool. Then he gets up.
I think
up,
I've seen this.
Yeah, and he picks up the light, and then he brings the light to the table, and they have a romantic dinner. And it was so funny because he showed the shot next to the storyboard, and it was like it was cut perfectly to the storyboard, but the storyboard was funny. It was like drone shot,
nice.
Epic, you know, like sunset shot. Like, it was like perfect, and it just, it was so simple. It was like maybe 8 or 10 shots just shot perfectly, cinematic as AF, and it was just gorgeous. And I was like, man, it, as long as you get the storyboard figured out and the message, it was like this light or whatever it was is perfect for the pool and also a romantic dinner. And it was just, it was perfectly
And that's
shot.
A very good segue to talk about the fact that we're going to talk about storyboard. It's super important. I know very little people who use storyboards.
That's right.
But when you're actually doing a commercial campaign and your video is going to be very short, I mean, and if your production involves many actors or actors, you know, like people who just are going to appear in your video and many locations and stuff, you want to do a storyboard to figure out before the production day.
Ooh, here we go. Nigel's got his storyboard ready. Yeah. Can I talk real quick about the mistakes of not doing a storyboard? I can tell you my experience.
I kind of wanted to keep all that topic for next time, but maybe we can talk about it.
I can
this is a lead up.
This is a lead.
Yeah, please, guys, stay tuned for next episode. We're going to talk
where John tells his story about how he messed up by not having a storyboard.
By not having a storyboard, So, anyway, so.
Yeah, you're right. That's the next.
The storyboard is going to help you also know how much, how long your production is.
Mm. Yeah.
So, anyway, let's go back. So, from this thoughts, also, let's go back to the meeting with a client. You also want to figure out, based on the budget, are you going to have, how long is your production? How long can you afford to shoot? Is it going to be one afternoon? It's going to be a whole day? It's going to be 2 days?
How long is the edit as well?
How much going to you edit? Are you going to include motion design, graphic, text, and all that kind of stuff? So all this you have to price in, and that's a good way to actually have leeway in the budget, you know? Like if you, if the person says, oh, my budget is only $1,000 or $2,000, and you usually like to work with a big story, like doing a proper storyboard, have a whole day of shooting and many hours in editing and graphic design, and that's usually $4,000, then maybe you can say, oh, okay, for $2,000 I can do like less preparation, but it's not going to be as good. You can, you have to kind of manage the client expectation.
Can I throw a wrench into your system? But what if the client doesn't have a lot of money and you're kind of desperate and you need the money and they're like, I want a super video, and you're like, okay, fine, I'll do a super video, but it's going to be under budget, and you know you're going to spend 25 hours editing it, but then you know for your resume it's a killer vid because you wouldn't have had the opportunity to be with that brand, that client, or whatever, right?
Of course. So that's that's the balance that you have to find between the client's budget, your expectations for how much, what is your value, how much do you want to get paid, and versus your experience. Like, can you actually pretend to those rates if it's your first or second or third video project for a client? Like you said, is it going to be useful for your portfolio? If you kind of make a mental Venn diagram, you know, of like, is it good money for me, or is it like going to be like good for my portfolio, or is it going to be that much work? So you kind of have the balance,
On this thread, like, what type of client is this? Can they afford it? Obviously, outside your like your raw budgeting numbers, you have to also consider like how much money does the client have? Because a lot of the times, if they can afford an expensive service, you should give them an expensive service. I'll give you an example. If you were hired to make a video for McDonald's, which is a crazy example, you know McDonald's has money, and you know like if the video is a success, they're gonna make a crap ton of money no matter what. Then you can price your video really high, even if the budget for the video itself is only like $400. Like if it's a really cheap video, if you just you shooting a hamburger spinning on a plate, then you know. But the client is McDonald's, so you have to price yourself accordingly.
Yeah. And they're now making a huge amount of money from selling using your video.
Exactly. So like you consider how much. Yeah.
Yeah. They're going to transform. They're going to transform the value that you give them into a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah. But if you're making a video for the new pop-up cafe around the corner who doesn't have a lot of money yet, you might want to do it because they're in your neighborhood. You know, they're your friends or something like that. Mm. And then you know you're not pricing them. You still try to fall within your budget. Try not to work outside like what you can afford. You shouldn't lose money on it. But at the same time, you find a fair price for that meets that client.
I will say one thing about your example. It's not to diss your argument. The argument is valid. But one thing actually I found out in my when I was working in Paris in a communication agency where my boss used to work, like we had pretty big clients. And what you find out actually is that very, very big clients don't actually pay that much. Mm. It's kind of like a weird curve, like very small companies.
Compared to Japan.
It depends. It actually doesn't have so much to do with the size of the company, I found. Like, you have sometimes very small companies who make very good business and they can afford very good, or they deem that it's valuable for them. Like, they value good marketing and good video and they're going to spend a lot of money. And sometimes you work for very big brands. We've worked for LVMH, you know, like the Louis Vuitton group, basically, or any kind of like pharmaceutical company, that kind of stuff. Mm. And they don't pay like crazy dollars. Like they pay good, like correct, but sometimes some other brands, like, they squeeze you, like they squeeze you like crazy. Yeah, yeah. So
they can because they're like, hey, we're a big name brand.
If you, exactly.
And this because this goes back to music bands. Music bands are hilarious. They do this all the time. If you make a music video for me, you're gonna get, when we're famous, we're gonna always talk about you and stuff. And music bands do this all the time.
You get to a peak, like there's probably the middle ground, and then you go to like very high, like big name companies, which are gonna they might be able to pay you less because, first of all, for your portfolio, it's good. And secondly, because they can search for many people. They can just do, I don't know how you call that in English, but something where you just like call for
basically
work.
Everybody wants to work for them.
Yeah.
So,
you just say, oh, we need this new project. And then 30
they come
communication
to you,
agency
you don't come
just,
to them.
Exactly. You get 30 people like, or 30 companies going like, oh, this is my proposal. This is my proposal.
Yeah.
And they can choose. So,
Exactly. So you're clients, fighting with the proposals from other videographers.
So I think when you're starting your career, don't like focus, don't think so much, oh, Nike is, or BMW is my dream job. Yeah. Mm. Even if you get it, it might not be as good as you think. So
I want to jump in here and say the hypothetical peak that you're talking about, I think probably why real estate videos are so popular now is because they fit very nice in there where they're willing to pay a lot of money because they just got to sell the property one time because they can only sell it one time.
And it's millions
if
of
they
dollars
do
for
sell
property.
Yeah, exactly. So like you can easily come in there and make like $100,000 video for them and they'll be happy. You know, if it's a good quality video and it keeps people invested in this property, then
I've been noticing in Vancouver the real estate agents are doing these sort of like lifestyle vloggy, you know, this is who I am, I'm Nigel, I'm a real estate agent, I'm having a coffee, and this is I'm going to the gym, and then he's like in his car, he comes out and he puts the thing down and come on, let's go take a look at this house. And it was like the weirdest thing. It was like
I think that's genius.
But he only had like 8 views. It was like
but still,
but it was dope. It was like, oh wow, this guy's dope, right? Like,
I think that's genius because I think real estate agents, they have this reputation reputation of being kind of sneaky about like hiding certain things from you. This is a weird example, but have you guys seen the movie Seven with Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt? So Brad Pitt moves into an apartment and they say something like, oh, we thought it was suspicious that the real estate agent only wanted to show us the apartment 5 minutes at a time. Once we moved in, we realized it's because it's next to the subway and the whole apartment shakes every five minutes. Right, so that's an extreme example, but I think real estate agents, they have this sort of sneaky reputation. So I think that guy, he's a genius, because he's like, I'm one of you guys. You know, he's basically an average Joe. And you want to trust the average Joe, you know?
I'm contemplating whether or not real estate's a good thing to get into myself. Like, anyways, I know that's a whole different thing, but I just wonder if it's a good thing to get into. It looks lucrative. Like, you could do, you know, 3 gigs a week, you know, $2,000 a pop. That's like $6,000 times 4. That's like $20,000. Like, it looks lucrative. It looks cool. But I just don't know if I want to be filming an empty house every, you know, 3 times a week, you know? It's like, oh, another house, you know? Like, am I going to fall into the rut of becoming a real estate videographer, right?
I mean, you can do a few amounts, you know, like a few amounts just to make some butter and
make some butter for the cheese.
Well, I think that's a whole other topic in itself, the different client niches. So I guess we're talking more generally about clients, but we could, if enough of you guys want us to talk about client niches, I guess we can do that in a future episode.
For sure. Hey, one thing I wanted to just tap into. So you've got the client and you're sitting in front of them. You've got the survey. And the first thing they're going to ask, they do this every time to you. They'll say, show us your stuff. Show us your demo reel.
Yeah.
What have you done?
Here it comes.
What have you done?
Go on, Nigel.
All right.
Show us your stuff.
Yeah. No. But it's all about being organized, right? And so I found this company called Visual CV. And all you do is you just go make a free template. And then you make your little template and you can move it all around. It's all drag and drop. And, you know, you can add your YouTube videos. What I did is I just put on a drone pilot, got my phone number. Hey, give me a call if you need a job. And I throw in education and some of my skills and all my videos I've been doing for 2 years. I just tweak, you know, get rid of the old ones, put in the new ones. Yes, I put some booby girls here because I know booby girls are good. And another one over here. But the point that I'm making is that now the client can see this. Now, I had about a month ago, we went to a studio here, actually, and they're looking for a tourism job. And he said, well, I want to see what you got. And I sent him a link to this. And so the link looks like this. And I sent it to him, and both the director and the producer opened up their iPads and whatever they were on, and they just started banging out videos. Now, I don't believe in creating a demo reel for everything I've ever done. I like saying, well, look, I've done tourism. I've done some, I've done some gym videos. I've done a tango video with William, by the way. He was the director of lighting, creative director over there. And I did a, you know, other one over here. These are some edits and some filming for, like, Is It a Salsa? It's a salsa event on an island. I did a wedding. It was my first ever wedding, and I put that on there. I would never want to do weddings again, but the point is I've done a wedding. So if somebody says to me, hey, Nigel, we're interested, we're going to give you $1 million. Can you do a wedding? Of course I'm going to do it. But I mean, the thing is,
that's what it would take to get you to do a new wedding.
I need both you guys with me, because doing it with a GH5 and a GH5S with a gimbal and a tripod and a handheld and trying to get the kiss shots all by yourself.
Alone is difficult.
It's no fun. I don't want to go there. And then this was another thing, and this is, you know, more videos, and you know, you get my point. But automatically, if I just tap, hopefully it's not so bad, if you just tap here, look at that. The client, no matter what device they're opening up, can see, okay, you did a sports gym video, there it is, right? So build up your resume, put it on here, and boom, bada bing, you've got an awesome platform that you can just pull out your iPhone, send a quick little, I mean, you can even download a PDF, right? Yeah. And send this PDF with links inside it. How cool is that? So that's what I wanted to throw at you guys.
So that's one thing I wanted to ask you also. We'll go over more detail about that in the fifth part is about the portfolio building and getting new clients. But so would you use that actually to... target specifically one client and edit it every time. You know, like, oh, this client is about gym, so I'm just going to put my gym stuff, you know, like...
Yeah. I have something to say on this. Yeah. This maybe is more fitting for the fifth part, I guess, but... I read a book on branding, one of these like cheap Kindle books that you can buy, but it was very interesting and a lot of golden nuggets there. And the guy, his niche was, believe it or not, wedding photography for people with tattoos and piercings, like incredibly specific. Yeah. But here's the golden nugget from the whole book. In his experience, if you are really good in one niche, two things are going to happen. One, people who are looking for that exact thing, they're only going to find you. And then second of all, once they know you're good at this one thing, people just automatically assume you can also do all these other things. So he's getting jobs for doing pet photography, baby photography, you name it, because he's known as being just good in general. So I think there's something to be said about picking a very specific niche in this sort of like video photography.
Personally, I don't like my portfolio 100%. I don't like that I've done... you know, so many different various things. I've had to do this because it took me 2 years to do this, and I can't focus on one thing. But the next phase of my videography life, I want to do three areas. I want to do events, I want to do corporate branding, and like gyms and things like that. So I kind of want to focus on those areas. I don't want to be doing weddings. I just don't want to get into that. I don't want to be the wedding guy. So for me, I want to focus on those three areas, and I believe that's where I'm going to excel in that area, because it's taken me years to figure out where I'm going to be good at. So I think that's what you have to do, is focus on a niche that you're good at. So,
well, we'll hit about those topics. We'll hit on these topics again, I think, in the last part.
we just can't seem to shut up.
It's like we get on to the this topic. But
it's all intertwined, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. That's why it's difficult to just... stay on one thing only.
But so I guess we should start by advertising the next part. What are we going to cover in the next part?
Let's wrap up. So the next part is going to be in next episode. We're going to talk about the pre-production. So that's going to include everything like we said about the storyboarding and preparing your gear, locations, how much time do you need, budget and expenses.
My story about how I failed by not having a storyboard. That's a good one.
For sure.
Sounds great. Like managing all those things to be ready as much as possible for the big day of the shoot having to stress so much during the shoot. Yep.
Sounds great.
I think we're going to talk about that.
All right, guys. So that's it. So I think it's time for us to finish up this podcast video. If you guys enjoyed the video, please leave your comments down below. We'll do our best to get back to you. John, got any final things to say?
No, I just thank you for listening. We really appreciate it. And, you know, we get as much value from doing this as you guys get from listening. We're just brainstorming a lot you know, having discussions. So thanks for giving us the opportunity to make these videos.
Awesome. All right, guys, thanks for watching, and as usual, peace.
Peace.